What's going on, guys? It's JP from The Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And today we're just going to do a little NBA recap. We haven't done one of these in a little bit. We have exciting things to talk about, and one of them is the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm going to start with this one because I have to eat a little bit of crow. When the James Harden trade initially went down, you can listen to our podcast on that day, I was infuriated. I was super, super upset because, as you know, if you're a longtime listener of the show, my favorite player of all time is Kawhi Leonard, and I want him to win another championship before he retires. And I felt like the James Harden move was not a beneficial thing to that end goal. I felt the same way about the Russell Westbrook move, and Russ actually proved me wrong by accepting a bench role and playing with energy on defense and rebounding the ball. I just didn't think it was going to happen twice, where James Harden was just going to suddenly change as a guy and come onto the team and help them out. James has been a perfect fit on the Clippers, and it's been a really, really weird thing for me to watch because the first six games he played with them, they lost all six of them. And then once Ty Lue figured out rotations, he figured out putting Russell Westbrook on the bench, all of these things started to click, and Kawhi's been playing at an all-NBA level, hasn't missed a game this season. Paul George, playing at a borderline all-NBA level, has only missed one game this season. And James Harden has accepted his role as a number two option rather than the best player on a championship team. Things are humming out in LA, and it's pretty cool to watch.
Things are absolutely humming. I want to go through some stats for the last 10 games for the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard is averaging 29 points a game on 57% from three and 63% from the field. Paul George averaging 21 and 5, really good shooting splits. And then James Harden averaging 21 points and 9 assists a game on 2 turnovers and 52% from the field, 51% from three. Yeah. So, you know, for all the shit that everybody, us included, has talked about James Harden, this is a massive crow-eating moment because the Clippers look just unstoppable. I mean, I kind of complained about the lack of multiple basketballs for this team, the fact that there was only one for to go around. Russell Westbrook has done the thing that he just seems to do for the end of his career here. He's just been the bigger guy, taken the smaller role, stepped back and let other people cook. And it's worked really, really well for them.
Yeah, I've been mightily impressed by, one, Ty Lue for, you know, not going on with the gag that, you know, Russ is the fourth star and he needs to be in the starting lineup. I'm glad he just put that to an end after, I think it was only 4 games of trying it. And I also want to eat crow with the James Harden situation. Something I kind of didn't realize was the spacing that the Clippers provide is giving him easier lanes to get to the rim. And the huge issue I had with James Harden on the Sixers was he was shooting like 30% at the rim. It was a disgusting number. It showed his athleticism was kind of going. It showed that he couldn't really bring explosion to a team that needed it in the Sixers against the Celtics. He couldn't provide it. With the Clippers, because everything's so spaced out, he's getting one-on-one matchups under the basket, and it's making it easier for him to be effective at the rim. And we're seeing his efficiency balloon up and his scoring balloon up because of it. And Kawhi, for all the people that said Kawhi was washed or Kawhi, you know, doesn't have the same explosion as he used to, I literally don't know what you're watching. I don't know what you're watching. I've heard Bill Simmons say it. I've heard Wozni Lombre say it. I've heard a ton of people I listen to say that. I don't know where they're getting it. I'm not sure if they're watching. I'm not sure if they're just reading article. I don't know what's going on, but if you watch Kawhi, he's hitting the same shots he hit when he was on the 2019 Raptors. Okay, is he dunking with ferocity every single game? No, but he had a play the other night where he jumped from a step within the free throw line and slammed down a left-hand dunk. So, I don't know, 29 points on 63% from the floor sounds pretty good to me. I think it's maybe time we stop doubting this guy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when James Harden showed up to the team, there was a rough patch. And obviously that's what comes with bringing a dude who has so much usage as James Harden has. It took a little while for things to really click. Kawhi had some pretty rough games. But if you've watched him since, you know, the past 2 seasons, and that's, we've been hearing this shit about Kawhi Leonard being washed for the past 2 seasons, while he continues to put up 50, 40, 90 splits, averaging over 25 points a game with a steal and a block a game. Like, you're right. I don't know what people are watching. Kawhi Leonard is not the dude he was in 2012 or 2013 in terms of athleticism, but he is still just as effective of a basketball player. Where do you put him? We've gone back and forth on this so much. He's played every single game this season, including back-to-backs. Where do you put him in terms of the rankings in the league right now?
Like, why is Jason Tatum better than him? Why? That he's not, right? So, like, for me, it's, you know, sixth or seventh best in the league because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander isn't better than him. Kevin Durant's putting up better statistical numbers than him. Kawhi's a better defender and is healthier than Kevin Durant. I'll give him the nod over that. LeBron, we obviously saw what he can do when he's on his apex. LeBron, I don't really even know where to place, but Kawhi's like a top seven guy right now, but no one's going to talk about it. No one's going to acknowledge it. Like, you know, everyone wants to talk about Tyrese Halliburton and, you know, SGA. These guys don't sniff Kawhi Leonard. So I have Kawhi at like either sixth or seventh in the league right now.
There's a thing that people, I think, just miss when it comes to these rankings. Every time the playoffs start, like, we saw what Kawhi did when he was healthy in the playoffs last year. There's no question about whether or not that guy's better than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, it's like, what are we talking about when it comes to, you know, who is the best in the league? Kawhi or SGA? What are we talking about? Like, that is not even a conversation.
I mean, I still ride for Jason Tatum. I think availability matters. I saw what he did against the Sixers in the playoffs. But Kawhi Leonard is available this season for the first time in, what, a decade?
Right.
So I'm not crowning him Mr. Available all the time yet because of one good quarter of a season, but I am very, very happy that he's playing back-to-backs.
But in right now, in a vacuum, who's better? It's you can't use the availability thing against Kawhi. It's just who is better, and it's Kawhi.
This season, Kawhi is probably... Last 10 games, Kawhi has been better than Jason Tatum, unquestionably. But the start of the season for Kawhi is not what he's doing right now. He was not 25 points a game on 50-40-90. He was 20 points a game on 44% from the field.
But before Harden got to the team, he was cooking at this level. And when the trade was made, then he had a massive dip where he was only taking like 10 shots in a game because they couldn't figure out who was supposed to handle the ball when. And then once the chemistry was made, it was like, oh yeah, I am a top 6-5 guy in the league. Like, I just think this team's really interesting. And I said some pretty damning things about them once the James Harden trade was made. Like, they're going to lose in the play-in, is what I said on this podcast. Now I'm considering, like, is this a team that pushes for a Western Conference Finals? Because when Kawhi plays like this, they're virtually impossible to beat in my eyes, this team. I think they would have beaten the Suns last year if Kawhi didn't tear his MCL after two games. And they were down Paul George, and I thought they were going to beat the Suns. So if Kawhi continues to stay healthy and play close to this level, this is a team that does need to be taken seriously come playoff time, despite James Harden being the biggest pants pooper in playoff history.
Yeah, man, I'm a little bit concerned because we know Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are going to miss 15 games. I don't want it to happen at the end of the season. I don't want it to happen when it's time for playoffs. The fact that he's as healthy as he is now, man, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year Kawhi Leonard plays an entire season. Maybe he hits that 65-game mark. If he hits that 65-game mark, I want him winning awards. Some kind of awards. I don't know what, but he's been fantastic this season. And honestly, he deserves that kind of recognition if he's able to stay healthy for a season.
And just a closing note before we move on from the Clippers, I do think it's important to mention Kawhi and Paul George are both in contract years along with James Harden. All of these guys are playing for max deals that probably could be their last big extension of their careers. That is why we're seeing the best health of these guys' career. That's why we're seeing some of the best numbers of these guys' career. And Kawhi is still like aiming for a championship. This isn't just, I want to get paid. Like, he views himself as a top 15 guy to ever play the game. If he adds one more title, that will come true. Like, we will have to talk about him in a different light than we do right now. So this team's definitely a team to keep our eyes on as the season continues. I've really enjoyed watching them so far.
They have been awesome. Let's move on and talk about the best teams in the East and West right now. The Celtics and the Timberwolves have hit 20 wins. Both teams are 20-5. Celtics were the first team to get there. The Celtics are so good. Man, I watched them when they were not fully healthy play against the Magic, and we had Lamar Stevens as our starting center, and we still ended up with a 15-point win. This team is so good, I've almost run out of things to talk about. We've talked about every single player on this team individually. Kristaps is awesome. Jason Tatum really isn't the 35-5, 38-5 that he was at the start of the year. It doesn't matter one bit. Every single person on the team can pick up some of those shots that he misses. He's had a really rough three-point shooting stretch over the past 10-15 games. It doesn't matter even a little bit, man. The Celtics are such a just a steamroll of a team.
Yeah, I think we have to give up on the Jason Tatum, like, elite shooter thing, but I think we can start pushing the narrative of Jason Tatum, the elite paint finisher. I think he's kind of changed as a player as he's added more weight and muscle to him. Like, he's unstoppable getting to the rim. If you're watching these games, like, guys just fly off of him when he's going to the paint when he's not Euro-stepping, and he's averaging, like, 9 free throws a game. No, 7, excuse me. But that's like a very good amount for a guy that used to be almost too jump shot reliant. This team, I don't want to jinx it. I'm going to knock on wood for you guys. It does feel like it's this team's destiny to win the title this year. Yeah. We're seeing the Nuggets faltering. You know, the Nuggets have lost a few weird games this year. Jokic had a weird couple performances back to back. Jamal Murray had gotten hurt. We're not hearing as much about Aaron Gordon and MPJ. The West is just a shit show, right? There's 100 teams that are trying to prove themselves. Every single night in the West, you're facing a good team. In the East, it's the Celtics and the Bucks, and maybe the Sixers if they make a move at the deadline. But really, like, the Bucks are the only team in the East that I can see challenging the Celtics up to this point. And yes, the Bucks are figuring it out, but they have a first-time head coach. This is the first year that Dame and Giannis have played together. They're still ironing things out. The Celtics have been a core unit for 3-4 years now. The chemistry with Jalen and Jason, even though people have like tried to break that up, including myself, they know how to play together at this point. They have the best GM in the league. They have the best talent in the league, 1-8. Like, it kind of does feel like this is their year, especially with the way they're humming through the regular season up to this point.
Is there legitimately a single role player in the NBA that is more impactful than Derek White?
I have said this for years. Like, he is literally the best role player in the league. How many teams would say no to a top five defender at their position and a 40% three-point shooter who can set up their teammates effectively for an entire game?
And a guy who's gotten a 30-point game already this season in a game where they needed him. Like, he wasn't listed as a top 100 player, according to The Ringer. That is absurd, man. He is, I mean, we've been going about this forever. He is the best role player in the league. There is a tier. There's 3 or 4 guys you could probably put on that list with him. But just the way that he is able to grow and shrink his role night after night, depending on what the Celtics need from him, is awesome.
I think that's what makes him so unique, is the ability to one night step up and give you 35, and then the next night give you 9 points, but give you absolute elite playmaking and defense and hit threes for you in the same, like, in back-to-back games. He can be a completely different player. This is the same guy that had us questioning, is he better than Trae Young after last year's first 2 games of a playoff series, right? Like, he was so freaking good. I just think the Celtics are an absolute unit. The way this team excuse me, is built is perfect. Brad Stevens deserves all the flowers in the world, especially, you know, a lot of Celtics fans were upset that the Marcus Smart trade was made. I don't think a lot of Celtics fans care right now. I really don't. I really don't. And that list that you meant referencing, ESPN's top 100 list, I remember me and you talking in the summertime when they were making that. And you were like, dude, this list is stupid. They don't have Derek White on it. And I was like, oh, no, only half the list has been released yet. I'm sure he's in the bottom 50. And he wasn't. And me and you were like, what the fuck? Like, because me and you are massive fans. The Ringer at least has him as the 49th best player right now, which seems fair. Okay. Like, got below guys like DeJounte Murray and James Harden. That seems fair.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Celtics, man, they're so well constructed. I really think they're going to do very, very well this season and have a very deep playoff run.
Yeah, man, I'm struggling. Obviously, as a homer, I'm struggling to see any team take this Celtics team down. The Bucks are the only team that really stands a chance in the East. I do want to move on, though, and talk about the Timberwolves, because the Timberwolves just continue to be fantastic. Their defense is number one in the NBA. Their offense, you know, comes and goes. They've got some guys who can get buckets. Karl-Anthony Towns, every other night, if you need a 28-point night from him, he will deliver. Anthony Edwards shows up in big games. Rudy Gobert deserves so much love right now. Yeah. Me and you last year very proudly said the Rudy Gobert trade might be one of the worst the NBA has ever seen. And I do want to just note, just for us, that Walker Kessler is doing the same exact thing over in Utah. And maybe he'd be just as good in Minnesota, but we probably have to stop with the this is the worst trade that's ever been conceived in the history of the NBA thing.
Yeah. No, it has to stop. Rudy Gobert is better than Walker Kessler. It's similar, but he's like much... I would say he's much better than Walker Kessler. I still think Walker Kessler's doing something similar, but he's much better. Rudy Gobert had a down year last year. What he's doing now is not comparable to Walker Kessler. It's still an abundance of picks, so we'll have to see how those play out for the Utah Jazz. But as of right now, you can see the thinking behind the Minnesota Timberwolves, where they are clicking on all cylinders. They have one of the best defenses in the entire league. When everyone's healthy and locked in, no one's scoring on this team with Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, and Jaden McDaniels on the court at the same time. And Karl-Anthony Towns, he's kind of putting on a, forcing an apology tour right now. Like, he is having by far the best year of his career. I've been super impressed with him.
Yeah, man. And he's not taking nearly as many shots as he's used to over the past couple of seasons. I heard him talk about the fact that, you know, I'm not the sun being surrounded by role players. Like, there's other planets around me now. There's other guys who really need to get their shots up. I love that kind of honesty and that kind of recognition from Cap. But you're right, man. It's a revenge tour going on. He is awesome. He had a 40-point night against Indiana. Really, really efficient. And he's not doing it by being a dude who hits four threes a night anymore. He's driving to the hole. He's driving hard to the hole. And that's not something I really expected. I thought he was just going to be a 6-7 three-point attempts a game kind of guy on this team. But no, he's only at 4.5.
Yeah, he's been incredible. And I also think it helps that he's surrounded by the defensive pieces he's surrounded by. But
absolutely.
His effort on that end has improved. And he doesn't look foolish anymore on that end. I'm never going to call him like a plus defender because he's just not. But it seems like he's reached a level of competency where they're not worrying about him night in and night out on that end. So all the props in the world to him, and everyone knows how I feel about Ant. I feel like I probably jumped the gun a little bit calling him like the 7th best player in the league a few weeks ago on this podcast. Probably not there yet, probably 11 or 12, but that's where I see his trajectory going, and he's still been awesome this season.
When he's at his best, it's hard to argue there's anybody else that's better. But the thing is, he's just not locked in to that extent in 48 minutes a night. I do want to give one final shout out to Mike Conley, man, for just being just such an amazing offensive player. Just a guy who sets up everybody perfect, who hits threes at 44%, one turnover to 6 assists. He, you know, the role shrinks and shrinks and shrinks as Mike Conley gets older, but he just does that job so effectively. There's really nobody that does that. There's a small amount of people who do that role, just the setup teammates, hit shots and get out of the way as effectively as Mike Conley does.
Yeah, and it's really funny. Last year I made an elite role players list as we headed into the playoffs that I kind of shared with you. And I just want to go, I found it on my notes app here. I have Mike Conley, Kyle Anderson, Naz Reid, and Jaden McDaniels on this list. And I think that's all played out pretty fairly. Like Kyle Anderson had 9 assists to 1 turnover the other night. Like, they have so many guys who can just step up and contribute to winning in a different way. And like you said, Mike Conley at his old age, still being able to do what he's doing as an offensive player, setting people up and shooting threes at the clip he is. This team is another team that has just been perfectly crafted.
I would have never predicted that the Timberwolves would start this year 20-5. Especially with the amount of time that Karl-Anthony Towns missed last season and how they looked when he missed games, I really figured there was going to be a struggle this year trying to integrate him back into what they were doing. They hit the ground running, and they've done it just through their defense. They really haven't worried about how do we integrate all the shots, how do we get all these guys their points. It's just, we're going to hold you under 100 points. Good luck holding us to under 100 points. It's fun basketball to watch, man.
And really quickly before we move on from them, we've talked about this a little bit. One of the reasons I love them so much is how much size they have on the roster. Having 3 legitimate 7-footers, I think when you face a team like the Lakers or you face a team like the Nuggets, or if you face a team that's small, like the Warriors or the Suns, you have an advantage, right? I think moving forward, this is a team that's going to be pushing for that Western Conference Finals. I think, you know, if OKC and the Timberwolves were to match up today, I'm throwing my entire bank account at the Timberwolves winning that series.
100%, man. We saw the Lakers' size led them to the in-season tournament. Without that kind of size and strength, it's really like you're a mismatch. Every single night, you're a mismatch. OKC going up against, you know, Chet Holmgren, the string bean, going up against Kat and Rudy Gobert all day. Like, that's going to be a tough, tough night for him.
Yeah.
So let's move on. Ja Morant is coming back to the Grizzlies tonight. What are your thoughts?
I'm super excited. I think the Grizzlies are one of the weirdest teams to watch. I watched them face the Rockets the other night in the Dylan Brooks return. They are playing some guys that you kind of shake your head at. Like David Roddy, I know you were a fan coming out of the draft just because he was a funny body and like had a funny name, but he's not an NBA player. And they're playing guys like Vince Williams Jr., who has been okay for them, but where did he come from? You know what I mean? Bismack Biyombo is an important piece for this team. Jake Gilliard, this like 5'11 point guard, has been playing a ton of minutes for them. Like, these are all scrubs. Marcus Smart has barely played. When Ja comes back, they will beat the Pelicans tonight, by the way. This team with Ja as an offensive creator, Jaren Jackson's shots become more open, Desmond Bane's shots become more open, Marcus Smart will get better looks when he's playing. He comes back tonight as well. This is going to just be a completely different team from this point forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This team's going to be fun to watch now. And they really haven't been so far. They've really been a hard watch. Jaren Jackson Jr. needs a guy who can help set him up. He is not a self-creator going out there and trying to get 30 on his own. Desmond Bane is a complimentary star. These are guys who fit well around a star. And Ja Morant is that dude, man. I'm really excited to see him come back. I'm kind of feeling like it's a little bit goofy the way Ja Morant's suspension has been dealt with in retrospect, from what we've seen with Draymond, from what we've seen, nothing being said about Josh Giddey, like just the shit with Miles Bridges getting suspended 10 games. It's really kind of goofy the way this suspension has looked in retrospect, but I'm so excited to have him back, man.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of the suspension, it does feel a little weird in retrospect. Like, Draymond has been a more of a danger to people than Ja Morant has.
Yeah.
Now, Ja Morant was using a firearm, which obviously can cause, like, fatal injury to someone. So that's nothing we're ever going to condone. But, I mean, I don't know. I was a fan of the suspension at the time. Looking back on it and how other players have been treated, now I'm kind of just like, well, if we're giving everyone a slap on the wrist, like, why did we make the exception for Ja Morant? You know what I mean? The Miles Bridges thing, like, 10 games as a formal suspension is weird. Yeah, he didn't play an entire season because he was in, like, legal talks and stuff. But, like, once things got resolved and he pled guilty, 10 games was his punishment. That feels a little strange. I'm just excited to not talk about it with Ja Morant anymore. Like, I'm ready to talk about him as a basketball player. I think I forgot how much entertainment he provides us. Like, this season has been incredible, but imagine if we got to see a Ja Morant highlight every other night like we usually do. Like, this would be one of my favorite NBA seasons of all time. So, I don't know. I just miss him as a player, and I miss the Grizzlies being a team that I look forward to watching also. Like, he's just such a popular player. I'm excited to have him back.
Yeah, man. I'm so excited to have him back. On the suspension thing, it's like, you know, it did feel justified at the time, because how did you just do it a second time? Like, you just got in trouble for doing it. Why are you doing it again? But to see the way they handle suspensions giving out to other players, it's become a little ridiculous. Ja Morant is must-watch television. The NBA is going to benefit from having him back, because he's not the controversy that surrounds his name isn't the same as like a Miles Bridges or a Giddey or a Draymond or anyone else these suspensions are going out to. No. People just want to see this guy hoop, man.
Yeah, and like the conversation about Ja Morant is like, does he hang out with the wrong people?
Right.
Like, yeah, probably. Has he hurt anyone? No. Has he done anything?
That 17-year-old that he beat up.
That's true. That's true. That's true. All right, so maybe I should stop talking then.
That's what he should be getting a suspension for.
Right, right. But all in all, like, as a basketball player, let's get back to that. Like, is he better than De'Aaron Fox?
It's arguable, man.
Arguable? Is he, you know, is he going to play better than Damian Lillard?
Maybe.
Is he better than Jamal Murray?
I think he's more must-watch than both of those guys.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. In terms of entertainment, absolutely. It's just, where do we slot him in as a player right now? Is he a top 20 guy? Absolutely. Just where on that list does he land?
People were putting him in the top 10s when he was playing.
Yeah. He was basically first team all NBA last year until he got suspended. And then people were like, oh, we can't reward this type of behavior. So it's a pretty weird thing. I think this team's going to be a lot of fun. They're playing the Pelicans, who they have a rivalry against since Zion got drafted over Ja. They've always played amazing games against each other. Yeah, I'm super excited to have him back in the league. I really am.
It's going to be a fun-ass game against the Pels tonight. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets, man. They're the number two defense in the league. It feels like every time we talk positively about them, they start sucking for a couple games, and then we talk negatively about them, and they start doing well. I want them to keep up what they're doing. And I really like, we talked about this pre-pod, but I really just like the scoring by committee. There are some nights where some of these guys can put up 25, 30 points, but it's really, they just rely on everybody to get theirs, and nobody's really going out and taking 24 shots a night.
Yeah, 100%. And the only guy who's playing, like, heavy, heavy minutes is Fred.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else is getting, like, decent minutes, but not being heavily relied upon. And with Ime, man, like, he is a defensive mastermind. He's taking a team with Şengün and turning them into a top two defense in the league. Like, that is pretty spectacular stuff. He deserves his flowers as a head coach. Dylan Brooks, like, literally might be the best free agency signing of the summer. Like, he's shooting threes at 40%. He's shooting from the free throw line at 83%. He's shooting from the floor 47%. And that's all while being an all-NBA level defender. That's the guy who goes and guards the best player every single night, and he's giving you that type of offensive contribution. It's kind of ridiculous, that this little run they put on. And now, like we said, we talked about them, I think, like, the second podcast, and, you know, we had to take them seriously. They're only two games over 500, but there's been a clear culture change in Houston.
Yeah, I think wherever they – I don't expect them to be, like, a team that wins a first-round series or anything like that. But wherever they end up in the playoff/play-in picture, they're going to be a tough out. They're going to be a hard team to face. And I really feel like they only have room to grow, man. Jalen Green is still shooting 40% from the floor, and they're kind of relying on him to be their go-to scorer. Jabari's still only averaging 12 points a game, taking 10 shots a game, playing under 30 minutes. Amen Thompson, I love. And he has only played 5 games. He missed, what, like 20 because of an injury, cooked up the G League, and then they brought him back up, and they really haven't been playing him much. This team only has room to get better, man. All the young guys have room to grow, and when they do, this team just has another level that they're going to be able to hit offensively.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's time that we start considering Jalen Green as just Jordan Clarkson. I think it's time. Like, I've been on that wave for a little bit now. We've barely seen any growth from him as a basketball player since he came into the league. Just, like, what has he gotten better at? I literally couldn't tell you. I do think this Houston team, if they had a more reliable scorer, like, if you swapped Jalen Green for another... You know, let's say you just swap Jalen Green for Zach LaVine. This team's, like, more dangerous. If you swapped Jalen Green for, like, Donovan Mitchell, someone who's, like, a bona fide certified, I get my own buckets at a good clip, this team would be legitimately kind of scary. But because they're missing that guy to put away games, that's why they're only two games above 500.
Yeah, man. And the hope is that they'll get there without having to shell any of their roster. The hope is Jalen Green will just be a guy who can become, you know, I said when he got drafted, this is a guy who could average 28, 30 points a game for a season. We're not there.
No.
We got years to go. We've got a lot of growth to go in terms of his three-point shooting ability, in terms of his consistency before we're going to be close to that. But he could be a guy, he averaged 22 last year. He could average 22 again. That's what they need if they want to really jump as a team. They need a guy who could be a go-to bucket getter. Really doesn't seem like Ime trusts Jabari to grow into that kind of guy. And it really seems like they're just kind of putting all their hope on Jalen Green. I watch a lot of these games where the whole game plan is we're going to get Jalen Green in a good position to score and give him a runway to the hoop. And the efficiency is just not what you want to see from him.
Yeah, it's just not there. And Şengün is their guy that they try to get go-to buckets from, and it has worked to a certain extent, but they just don't have a consistent perimeter threat. And I think that's what me and you were kind of talking about here, where it's like, Fred's having a great season. You're not counting on him to close games for you. He's 5'11". He's basically limited to shooting three-point shots. Dylan Brooks having a great revival series or season, that's not what you're counting on him to do. Same thing with Jabari. Like, this isn't a guy you're just handing the ball to and saying, close the game for us. So they do have areas of improvement that they need to hit, and it kind of does rely on Jalen Green becoming who they drafted him to be, which is like Bradley Beal. Like, if it was if he was Bradley Beal right now, this team would be pretty good too. So I've been super impressed by this Rockets team. I love watching them. I think their identity is like very pleasing to the eye. Just how it looks when they're closing down teams and then Şengün is bullying people in the paint and getting his teammates open looks. It's a really fun style of play, but I think Rockets fans kind of have to be happy with how their team's playing this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have to be happy. I want to give one shout out to Tari Eason. He's leading the team in plus minus, and it's really kind of obvious if you watch this team. He's got so much energy. He's the kind of dude who is playing at 110% every single second that he's on the floor, shooting 42% from three. It's on limited attempts, but there really isn't an area of the floor that he isn't impacting winning right now.
Yeah, he's a master at the offensive glass, too. If you ever watch these games, he just comes flying in from nowhere and grabs boards. I want to move on to something that kind of surprised me over the weekend. Lauri Markkanen is on the trade block. Danny Ainge basically told, I think Jake Fisher was the reporter, that, you know, we're not trying to ship Lauri out, but we will listen to offers that teams have. Whenever I hear that, I think, okay, this player will stay on the team he's on at the end of the season. Like, he probably won't get shipped. But just the idea that if a team really wanted to, they could fetch Lauri Markkanen, who I adamantly think should have made All-NBA over Julius Randle last year. You're adding a borderline All-NBA player to a team. That can push you into a championship conversation. And a team that just sticks out to me immediately is the Miami Heat. They've been begging for a guy who can just get buckets, and putting him next to Bam and Jimmy Butler, adding a 7-footer just for like help side protection and stuff like that around Bam is super intriguing to me. What do you think of just like Lauri being on the trade block?
It's really interesting, man. My thought process, and I think we had a kind of conversation about this before the season really started, is how much can we rely on a repeat year from Lauri Markkanen in terms of what he did last year? 26 points per game on 64% true shooting, led the NBA in points per touch. In my mind, that might be as high as we can go on Lauri Markkanen. If you sell him now, you're selling him at the absolute peak. So if you're Danny Ainge and you feel like, you know, maybe that kind of season isn't replicatable from Lauri, maybe move on from him and get as much as you can right now. I don't have a problem with that, man. I think he would be great in Golden State. I mean, where wouldn't he be great? He would be great on literally any team that could pay for him. There's a lot of teams, if he's available, that are going to try to ship the house to get him. I think Toronto could make a move, send Pascal Siakam. I think that kind of spacing could be huge for them. But honestly, you just pick a mid-level team in either conference and you can figure out why Lauri Markkanen would be a huge upgrade.
And what's interesting with the Lauri piece as well is he's not a max guy. He's on a four-year, $64 million deal. Now he's halfway through that deal starting this season.
That's chump change.
That is chump change in the NBA.
Dylan Brooks is making more money.
Dylan Brooks is making more money than Lauri Markkanen right now. Lauri Markkanen is a borderline All-NBA player, so if you're a team with a heavy cap hit, like, you can still take on Lauri Markkanen. Like, the 76ers are a team that could go after him. You add Lauri Markkanen to the 76ers? Like, that is a beautiful fit. Miami's a team that comes to mind. Indiana, adding more shooting and size, comes to mind. You know, Atlanta has a bunch of pieces that they could put together and ship out in return for Lauri Markkanen. There's just so many teams, Golden State being one of them, Houston being one of them. There's a million options for a team to get Lauri Markkanen and then immediately inject themselves into being taken seriously. I'm super intrigued who's in that conversation around trade deadline.
Yeah, man, me too. The thing I'm thinking is, from what OKC's been able to do, stashing treasure chests full of picks and turning them into things, I feel like Danny Ainge is just looking to do that. We've seen the Walker Kessler trade. He grabbed, what was it, 4 first-round picks, including Kessler. Shipping out Lauri Markkanen, could you get you another 3 or 4? I don't know. I can't think of a team off the top of my head that's built up a treasure chest like this and then failed to do anything about it, because right. That's always the big worry. But honestly, if you don't think this year's going anywhere, if you don't think next year's going anywhere, ship out Lauri Markkanen and get pieces to build for the future. That seems like Danny Ainge's MO.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think OKC is another landing spot that's really easy to think of, right? You get another 7-footer on that team. You get better 3-point shooting, which is a weak point of that team. And he kind of just flawlessly fits into any situation because of how little he actually needs the ball. So I don't know, man. That seems like a really, really intriguing fit. You can put him at the 4 and have Chet at the 5, and that way you have 2 7-footers out on the court without sacrificing your shooting and spacing. There's just a lot of teams that could really benefit. And I, as a massive Lauri fan, this was a big, big headline for me to read this weekend.
So the Jazz are 12th in the West right now. If they kept Lauri Markkanen and the entire team stays healthy through the rest of the season, do you have any faith in them as like a play-in team or a team that's interesting in any way?
No, they're awful. Yeah. They're awful. And I've watched a few of their games. Like, Jordan Clarkson isn't what he was last year. I think a big reason of why the Jazz kind of surprised people last year was because Jordan Clarkson all of a sudden became an efficient playmaker who also gave you 20 points per night alongside Lauri being an all-NBA caliber guy. That is not what's happening this year. Like, Lauri's still at the same level, but Jordan Clarkson has plummeted in terms of effectiveness. So, like, and Keontae George, they're trying to give him developmental minutes, and Taylor Hendricks is coming up every once in a while and playing, which I think is the right road to go down. But, you know, if you're Danny Ainge, what is the motivation to keep these guys?
Exactly. Like,
the value you can get back for these players right now is so tremendous. Even though you're setting your franchise back a few years, you're not really going to be able to achieve anything in the Western Conference with how stacked it is right now with the team you currently have.
And Lauri Markkanen, in his last year of his contract, is next year. So if you keep him and then next year you lose him for nothing and he goes to a team that wants him, you know, like, what's the value in that? I think now is the time to trade Lauri Markkanen this season before the trade deadline. I want it to happen.
Do you think they will or do you think they won't? Because that's where I get hung up.
To me, it's all based on if there are picks available. I think if Danny Ainge has some really valuable picks that he could throw or that he could receive for Lauri Markkanen, he's going to do that deal.
Okay. I mean, I'm curious what team actually musters up and does it, right? Because is Miami waiting for Donovan Mitchell, or are they okay grabbing Lauri Markkanen instead?
I think they'd be okay grabbing Lauri.
Okay. And then, you know, the Knicks, right? Same thing. Are they looking for Donovan Mitchell, or are they okay adding Lauri Markkanen to their team? Same thing with the Thunder. Same, you know, you can go down the list. Like, are there bigger fish to fry that you're saving your picks for if you're a franchise? Or are you looking at this guy saying, he's one of the most efficient players in the league, and we know he's going to fit in here because he doesn't need the ball?
I want to see Golden State do whatever they can to try to get this man onto their team.
Yeah.
I don't know what that trade even looks like. And we can kind of pivot and talk about Golden State now, because they're kind of in for some turmoil, man. Draymond Green is suspended indefinitely for continuing to hurt people. You know, he used to call these things accidents. He used to say, you know, I wasn't looking where I was going. It was a natural basketball motion. And now he's kind of being more upfront about, yeah, I hit him. I was trying to sell a flop, so I turned and hit him. He's losing his mind, man. I think Draymond Green is kind of slowly losing it. And the support that he's had around Golden State's kind of starting to go away. I've heard Steve Kerr say negative things about Draymond more in this season than I legitimately have ever heard from him. Things are starting to deteriorate in Golden State, and it sucks because Steph Curry is still one of the best players in basketball.
Yeah, I am a Draymond, or I was a Draymond defender on this podcast in the past. I believe there are some people on this earth that need to be punched in the face, and I believe Jordan Poole was one of those people. And I think the feedback we got from former teammates and current teammates kind of validated that. What I don't really mess with at all is just being a literal danger to society when people are just trying to feed their families and play basketball. Like, I think that's fucking stupid. And I think the way Draymond's been acting as of late is disgusting. I mean, he's done this his entire career, but the frequency that it's happening at right now is just ridiculous. I'm glad he got suspended. And I'm glad the Warriors are kind of seeing him for what he is, which is an extremely valuable defensive player, but also someone who hurts your team.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's what's happening. I think I texted you this a few weeks ago, maybe at the start of the season. I don't know. But he's helped them win as many titles as they have, but he's lost to them just as many games. You know what I mean? It's like, with the behavior, the antics, you know, he gets tossed out of the finals in 2016. The Cavs end up coming back and winning that. He gets in a beef with Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant fucking hates him, chooses to move on and go to the Brooklyn Nets when he could have re-signed there for another 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, his antics, his behavior is what makes him great, but it's also what makes him bad. It's a very weird player to dissect. I'm just glad he got suspended, and I'm glad the building is kind of looking at him a little differently.
Yeah, it seems like we're kind of going to start talking about Draymond when he retires, when his career's all over. It seems like we're going to talk about him more as a guy who is dangerous and destructive a little more than we might have originally, even though that's been who he is his entire stint here. Telling Kevin Durant, you're a bitch and we don't need you, get out of here. Like, that's stupid. Yeah. And the fact that they backed him, I mean, it got him a chip in 22. So I think the Warriors, for all that they have been through with Draymond, they would do it all again.
Yes.
Because it got them these chips, man. Now is the time where you have to cut your losses. Draymond Green's probably not helping Steph win another championship. Klay Thompson's probably not helping Steph win another championship. They got to find new people. They got to find new pieces. I don't even know who those pieces are.
And that's a really interesting point with the Draymond piece, because they just extended him in the summertime.
Yeah.
So you can't cut your losses, basically. You're locked in. And it's, you know, will Draymond change his behavior? I'll give you the answer now.
No.
This is who he is. You know, that, you know, sometimes what made him great is being this way. Why would he change after a decade in the league and multiple championships? It just doesn't make sense, right? So he will be suspended again. Maybe for an entire season at this point, right? Because how many times are we going to let a repeat offender just continue doing what he's doing at this point?
I mean, how many years has he been in the NBA?
Right. Right. I mean, I think 11 years in the league now.
Yeah.
And he's done it. He's been this way the entire time, and it's won him championships.
League leader in nut kicks, league leader in you know, chokes, technical fouls, ejections.
Who are we to tell Draymond to change is probably what he's thinking in his head, right? Like, he's the 100 millionaire. He's the 4-time NBA champion.
Right.
He's the 2-time defensive player of the year. It makes no sense for him to listen to two white kids from Hudson, Massachusetts tell him to calm down. It makes no sense.
Right. Steve Kerr's not saying it.
Yeah. The thing I want to focus on is Klay Thompson and Chris Paul and Andrew Wiggins, okay? Because Steph Curry's still playing at an all-NBA level. And probably a top 5 guy still, right? The issue is Andrew Wiggins has played so poorly this season that he was benched. He is getting paid $25 million a year, and Steve Kerr had to look at him in the face and say, we're playing Jonathan Kuminga over you from now on. That is how bad Andrew Wiggins has played as of late. Now, he had a 30-point game the other night. I don't care. He spent the entire season being ass. I'm not going to let him off the hook for one 30-point game. Klay Thompson, as of late, his last three, 28 points, 24 points, 30 points. He's been really good as of late. Guess what? The first 22 games before that, he was ass. I'm not going to let him off the hook after three good games. Chris Paul, holy shit. I mean, this guy's great at setting his teammates up, but getting paid $40 million to do what he's doing, I think the Warriors should seriously consider using him as cap relief to a different team to take on bigger contracts at the trade deadline, and sending him somewhere as an expiring deal to get back someone who could actually help them win now. I think that the Warriors are kind of in dire situations right now because Klay's looking for an extension. You have to convince him to take like mid-level exception money at this point of his career. you know, where do you go from here as a Warriors fan or even the Warriors GM? Like, what do you do to fix this?
It's a really great question, man. I mean, I think the Warriors have lived and died by the crazy man. So Draymond Green, the extension they gave him, he's going to be part of their future at least the next season. I mean, if you can convince a team to take a $25 million, 34-year-old, 35-year-old crazy man, good luck to you. But it's going to be Draymond sticking around. Klay Thompson might just not be a Warrior next year, legitimately. The report was that he was offered 2 years, $48 million, and he turned it down. The Warriors aren't offering him that again, man. They're not offering him anything close. But is there a team out there that could throw $60 million, $70 million at Klay Thompson over a four-year deal? Maybe. Maybe the Pistons are that desperate. Maybe there's a team out there that's that desperate. The Spurs, would you rather have whoever they have on their bench or Klay Thompson? You'd probably rather have Klay Thompson. I think we're kind of at a point here where the Warriors are just doomed. That might be dumb to say. Maybe there's a way they turn it all around, but I feel like they're just doomed.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. They are doomed. The Draymond behavior mixed with the Klay being washed, mixed with CP being washed, mixed with Andrew Wiggins playing at some of the worst basketball he's played in his entire career, plus them being one of the smallest teams in the Western Conference, this team's doomed. Like, they don't have any chance to win a title this year. And when you have a transformative star in Steph Curry and you're blatantly out of the picture by the quarter mark, this is a massive failure of a season for this team.
Yes, a massive failure with really no hope for a turnaround. Steph Curry is going to continue to be incredible. He's going to continue to try his hardest to pull this team into victories they don't deserve, but there's really no hope for them becoming like a top four, top six seed.
The one thing I want to give Steve Kerr credit for is having the nuts to bench Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins and giving Jonathan Kuminga some run, giving Brandon Podesta some run, giving Moses Moody some run, finally. Because I think the main complaint of Warriors fans over the last year or two since the title has been the young guys don't play at all. And I think he's finally remedied that a little bit. So that's the one piece of credit I'll give to Steve Kerr here.
Moses Moody is crawling his way into that starting lineup, man. Digging and scratching. He's trying his hardest. Brandon Podziemski is an awesome player.
Yeah,
really, where do they go from here, though? It's hard to know. I mean, I think it's going to be just a disappointing year for them. Before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about the Cavs. Darius Garland and Evan Mobley are out for 6 to 8 weeks. And in their first two games without those two guys, they get two victories. And there's a lot of three-point shooting to go around. What are your thoughts?
I think this has made Colby Altman's life very easy. It is so blatant what he needs to do. He needs to trade Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen as fast as he can. We've been trying this two small guard lineup. We've been trying this two big lineup at the same time. And it's just, it hasn't been working. The chemistry's looked odd. There wasn't enough shooting. There wasn't enough spacing. If Darius Garland and Evan Mobley are on the court together and there's spacing around those two, this offense will be humming. And they'll also have a defensive player of the year type talent backlining in Evan Mobley. Jared Allen needs to go, and so does Donovan Mitchell. So this team opens up. I think what's interesting about this team is when one of the bigs has played and the other one's been hurt, the teams look awesome.
Yeah.
And same thing with the guards. And they have two players that they have locked in for at least 7 years in Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. And they have two players that contracts are ending and have eyes for other cities on their team. And it's so obvious what you need to do. Get rid of Donovan Mitchell, send him to New York, send him to Miami, wherever he'd like to go. And then with Jared Allen, find a team like OKC or the Dallas Mavericks who need some center rotation help and send him there for either a role player or some picks. And voila, you have your team for the next 5 years. And now it's time to build around only Evan Mobley and Darius Garland. And I don't know, it seems like a pretty easy way to fix this issue with them. What are your thoughts, Ben?
My thoughts, first of all, is how much of a bummer it has been watching how good the Cavs are with Evan Mobley not on the floor.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not on Evan Mobley. If you swapped out Allen for Mobley, I think we'd see just about the same level of play.
It happened earlier in the season, right. Yeah.
It's the one big. It's the 1 7-footer who can't space the floor. That is the maximum amount that you need to have on the floor at once. you know, we talk about this all the time. Teams don't play like this for a reason. Every season, we see a team that's doing stuff nobody else is doing, and they might surprise people, and they're better than everybody expected. But then people kind of figure out, oh, yeah, this is why nobody else is running as 2 7-footers who can't shoot strategy. Yeah. When they're spacing, they hit, I think it was 19 threes in that back-to-back against the Celtics. They averaged 10 or 11 on the season. The spacing is night and day different. And yeah, it's such a better team to watch, man. I think you see awesome moments when the whole starting five for Cleveland is healthy. But, like, you know, through the whole 48 minutes, watching a team that has legitimate spacing, that's got guys that you can kick out to. Dean Wade's a good shooter. Niang's a good catch-and-shoot guy. Sam Merrill came up and hit 5 out of 10 threes the other day. As long as you have one big, one small guard, and then 3 wings who can shoot, that is the formula for success.
100%. And they have a trade piece in Donovan Mitchell that can recoup the assets they sent out to get him and get them role players that fit their team better than the ones they have.
So if you're going to trade Donovan Mitchell, are you looking for picks that we can help use in the future, or are you looking for players? Give me guys who are good right now to build out the team.
Both. He's in the heart of his prime as an all-NBA second-team player. Like, he is a good enough player to fetch back both. We're not going to settle for, oh, just give me a good young player. No, this guy is 27 in the middle of his prime. He just made his first all-NBA team. He's having another really good season now. He is good enough to fetch back a massive package, similar to the one that we sent out to get him with Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, and 3 first-round picks. That is something that I expect in return.
What if it's not Miami or New York? What if you send him to a team that just gets you the best assets back? What if Toronto's going to throw in OG Anunoby and Gary Trent Jr.? Is there somewhere outside of New York and Miami that you could see, like, these assets would be perfect?
So that's the issue, because Kobe Altman, I don't think, has the nuts to do that. And I also don't think a lot of the GMs in the league have the nuts to do that. We saw with Joe Cronin in Portland, he forced Dame to go to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, obviously, Dame agreed to it at the end of the day. It wasn't his first choice, but he thought, hey, I'm going to be playing with Giannis. That's a pretty good guy to hitch my wagon to. And he was right. That team's humming. Milwaukee was never on Damian Lillard's list. Is there another team for Donovan Mitchell to go to? Possibly. I just don't think it's going to happen, because that would mean Kobe Altman would have to put him up for trade at this year's trade deadline. Because once it hits summertime and he has 1 year left on his contract, he gets to choose where he goes. I don't see Kobe Altman pulling the plug on this season and just shipping him wherever he wants. I just don't see that.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think the fact, I mean, he was obviously a big risk taker to go out and get Mitchell in the first place. Right. But it does take another level to say, you know what, I don't really care where you want to go. I'm going to send you to the middle of nowhere because I'm getting the better picks back.
Right.
And you're right. Maybe Kobe Altman doesn't have the stones for that.
I would love to see Donovan Mitchell on Miami personally. I think the haul that they can give the Cavs plus what it makes Miami look like is a win-win. I think it turns Miami into a legitimate title contender, because Donovan Mitchell is a guy that can close out a game by himself. If you put that guy next to Jimmy Butler and Bam, that is a really hard trio to stop.
It's true.
And then what they can give us back is Tyler Hero, who's taller than Donovan Mitchell and a better playmaker than Donovan Mitchell, and Jaime Jaquez Jr., who's an older rookie at the forward spot, which is the Cavs' biggest weakness by far. And I think it just puts us on a better trajectory to grow as a team for the Cavs, and it also propels the Heat into the title contention area. So, I don't know. I want this deal to get done sooner rather than later. I also think it'll greatly help with Evan Mobley's development. I really, really do. It's weird being a Cavs fan this season just because the season barely matters to me. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of where it's at. Darius Garland and Mobley missing 6 to 8 weeks kind of kills your chances of gaining momentum right now where it matters. Darius Garland, when he comes back, what level is he going to be at? He really was struggling in the beginning, and then he just broke his face running into Kristaps Porzingis. Like, is he going to come back at 100%? You know, the level, the hovering around all NBA, that's kind of where I felt like he was last year. He was never going to make it, but he was a top 20, 25 guy. what level do you come back to when those guys are healthy with Mitchell and Allen not being moved? Like, because most likely that's not going to happen. Where are your expectations for the Cavs, you know, come season end?
Honestly, a play-in team at this point, which is sad, but I think we're definitively better than Brooklyn. I think we're definitively better than Atlanta.
Yeah.
But to try to sneak into the playoffs is going to be tough because Indiana has to be taken seriously now because of Tyrese Halliburton's emergence and just their high-powered offense. So it's going to be, you know, is Indiana or the Cavs going to be in the, you know, the eighth seed in the playoffs or whatever.
Right. And I think Indiana might be a tougher out for those teams.
Yeah. So this season's been a bummer as a Cavs fan, just kind of through and through, even though they did exactly what I wanted them to do in the free agent market and they nailed both of the signings. Mm-hmm. It's just the double big, double small thing. You're right. Teams don't play this way for a reason.
Right.
Too much repetition of the same thing on the same teams,
yeah.
The same weaknesses and the same strengths. You need a more well-rounded team, and I just think getting off those two guys and Allen and Mitchell gives them a better chance to be a less repetitive team.
Yeah, man. As beautiful as some of those Mobley to Allen oops are, some of those, you know, the 4 or 5 pick and rolls that they run, yeah. It really only gets you a couple cool plays a game, and it's not worth the challenges that come with running that lineup. I will say, man, just for your sake, now is a great time to be a Celtics fan. I don't think anybody will judge you. You're already in the area. If you want to sneak on over, man, I think anybody would welcome you.
What has happened is I no longer hate the Celtics. I actually have an appreciation for the organization and the players that play for that team because I've always loved Derek White and I've always loved Al Horford. It's just the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum thing. I still think Tatum's a little bit overrated. I don't know if I'll ever get off that train, I can't in good faith jump on when they're at their all-time peak. I just can't. So I am rooting for their success, for the happiness of my friends and family, and for me to be able to go get absolute shit-faced at a parade.
There you go.
That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't switch over in good faith. And I love the Cavs still. It's just this season is absolutely pointless to me. So
yeah. I mean, some years are like that. You got to just check in next year. I think that's it, though. I don't really know if we have anything more basketball to talk about. Jared, you got anything?
That is it for me as well.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you later. Peace out.
Peace.